Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast, and my guest today is Veronica Kieran. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. Veronica is an anthropologist, entrepreneur, and author of Stories of Elders, What the Greatest Generation Knows About Technology That You Don't. And Veronica has a history in the nonprofit sector, serves on a board currently, and has done some disaster relief work. Did I get that mostly right, Veronica?
Yeah, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And, you know, my first business, I've been an entrepreneur for a decade, but my first business was a 501c3 nonprofit organization as well. So, you know, really have this multifaceted inner working view of what nonprofits go through from a internal standpoint, let alone then now we have a pandemic and all these other things that are making being in the nonprofit sector a little challenging.
Sure. Absolutely. What are you seeing these days? What's crossing your table these days?
So I'm actually on two boards. One is so early in creation. So I've kind of come on in the early days, but the other board that I'm on is for STEM Greenhouse, which is a nonprofit organization that brings STEM learning into schools where their test scores in the STEM areas are pretty low, and so we're leaving kids behind. So we're here to create programs, come into the schools, and provide STEM learning that is fun and exciting to the kids. And of course, you know, with schools being out, not only are we pivoting around funding, we're also pivoting around how do we create programming with the virtual needs of today's world.
Right, right. So I can imagine those are pretty huge discussions. I was wondering if you had to tackle them as a board or if you had staff that was handling those things and just asking the board for input.
Oh, you know, that would be lovely. No, I do tend to find myself on fairly small boards. So STEM Greenhouse is local to Michigan, and our team is a team of two at this point. So yeah, the board is definitely heavily involved in the pivot and in making decisions as to how do we make this happen and support this organization through this period, learn from it, so that we don't pivot so hard that now we have to work really hard to get back to the way things were, and also maybe even grow our donor base and grow our impact despite it all.
Mm-hmm. And one of the bullet points you had sent to me was talking about the initiatives that nonprofits implement at this time in order to pivot their work. But I want to talk a little bit more about engineering a pivot that isn't hard to extract yourself from. Can we talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So, you know, as you know, my day job or, you know, my day-to-day work is with entrepreneurs who are running businesses. And so one of the things I find in the nonprofit sector is often forgotten is that a nonprofit organization is still a business. When you file that paperwork, you have to file with the state that you're in, if you're in the United States, as a nonprofit corporation. And then you have to file with the IRS in order to be 501c3 compliant and tax exempt. You're still considered a company and you're still taking in funds. You just handle them a little differently. And so with my daily work with entrepreneurs who are for profit, we're having to pivot. You know, we're in a pandemic that's changing the way business looks for right now. And hopefully into the future, we can, as I said, learn something from it. And what I saw, especially in March and April, was the tendency to panic pivot. And so, businesses were scared and they thought, oh my God, here's a brand new world. I'm going to get left behind. So I'm going to go way over here in left field and try to, be competitive in a world we don't even understand yet. Right. And these principles go for nonprofits because the most important thing when you have to make a pivot is to return to your values and your mission statement. Why are you in business? And that's true for a business and a nonprofit. Why did you found the organization? What are you doing here? What's the goal? And so with nonprofit, values, of course, as you know, Mickey, are incredibly important to the mission of the organization. And so when a pivot is necessary, like we're doing at STEM Greenhouse, where we have to pivot to doing virtual programming, the original goal of the organization and the hopefully, you know, strategic plan, which is the nonprofit, business plan, which is for profit, hopefully you've got one. and you can return to that and say, okay, what were we doing here when we originally created the organization? And how do we stay true to that? So we only pivot by maybe 1 or 2 degrees, get around this hiccup, and then we can pivot back only 1 or 2 degrees rather than, you know, you end up in Timbuktu when you meant to end in South Korea. Right. Like,
so you're saying stay true to your mission, and it's probable that you don't even have to pivot that hard. Like with a couple, maybe minor adjustments, that might be the way to go instead of doing anything really radical.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Almost always when I've seen an organization that needs to pivot, it's actually not that big of a pivot that's necessary. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, especially as an executive director, when you're in it and all of that responsibility is on your shoulders, especially if you are serving, you know, children or direct community members, you have that those touch points actively, it feels like a lot. And so that's where you sometimes see nonprofits over pivot. And they think that, you know, maybe I need to go over here instead and serve an entire different group or in a different way, and it loses out on that mission and then starts you kind of down that path of how did we get here, you know. I always hate to see somebody say, you know, wake up in a year or two and say, how did we get here?
Right. I hate to ask you to name names, but I'm going to ask you to name names. Can you provide an example of an over pivot? And that may be something we just don't do, and I edit out the question. But
that's okay. Let me see if I can think of one, because within my sphere of influence, I've really tried to get in front of the train before it goes off the tracks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm proud of what we're doing here at STEM Greenhouse, that we are pivoting to virtual, but we're still using the same kits that we use with the kids. We're still using the same programming that we've been using with the kids. We're having to figure out what does after school programming look like, because how do you keep kiddos' attention span, when it's just a computer. But no, so I'm not getting a super strong example for you, unfortunately.
It's okay. So what are some initiatives that nonprofits can implement at this time in order to pivot their work?
So if you haven't already, it's really important to sit down with the board, and I hope that you have a really strong working board. And that was one of my failures when I founded my nonprofit, is I didn't know about working boards. I just thought boards were advisors, which they can be, but hopefully during this time you have a strong board that has had their hands in the organization to some extent. And so they can start to advise you, you know, if you're the executive director or if you're a board member listening, to really expect to be a little bit more active in order to support the organization. One of the things that I loved that we did was really take a look at what's our strategic plan, what's our financial plan up to this point, right? So what does it all mean to the financial plan? And where are the opportunities? And I think that's the most important thing, is to look at this as opportunity rather than crisis. Mm-hmm. I say this over and over, that pandemics and paradigm shifts, which is what we are going through, are both crisis and opportunity. So we can sit in fear and panic, or we can sit here and say, okay, we have to do something. What can we do that actually creates more? Mm-hmm. Maybe we end up creating a initiative that serves in the virtual realm, but it does. We do it so well. We do it with a lot of thought, so that it actually opens another door, so that when we return to the physical, maybe we keep the virtual. Maybe we're serving a population that is parallel to the work that we've been doing, and now people with disabilities have better access, or people with chronic pain who can't always make the make the event or experience or whatever you're creating in the nonprofit, now the virtual can stand in there. And so that's my biggest takeaway for anyone listening, is to think about what are the opportunities, and then, you know, make sure they're rooted back into your strategic plan.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I've heard other nonprofits say similar things, especially in the way, in the realm of fundraising, not just program delivery, but they're finding that doing the virtual fundraising thing is actually opening new doors for them.
Yes. Yes, I'd love to talk about that. Can I talk about that?
Absolutely, please, Veronica. In fact, one of my questions, will we may branch off to this, is, you know, what do you know about virtual fundraising galas? but yeah, let's talk about just in a general sense. We don't have to talk about events, but please.
Yeah, yes. Well, I'm so excited about this. So first of all, okay, so let's, like you said, let's go broad strokes here. So one of the things that one of the opportunities we had in the organization is that we had a donation link on the website, and we were set up with Facebook and Amazon Smiles. So we have those outlets, but there was some missed opportunity in that we didn't have a donation capability to take recurring donations from private donors. And in fact, we've been very successful, very lucky with our grants. But grants are in a crisis are usually the first thing to go. And so we really wanted to make sure we stepped up our game with private donors and to really engage them. You know, as we know that private donors, they like giving, of course. But if you don't stay in front of them and show them the fruits of their donation, just like anyone else wants to see the fruits of their labors, sometimes then you lose people. So we see a lot of much greater retention with private donors if we have stories to share, photos, experiences. And so we're making sure that, first of all, we can create a subscription model for giving within the organization, but also that comes with a subscription to our newsletter, which goes out quarterly, that describes the impact of their donation. And even when they donate, we're very clear that, you know, here are the levels that are available, and of course you can give more, but these levels, each level has its own thing. So you know, this level will buy one science kit for a class, and this level will fund a student to go on a STEM field trip, right? So it becomes tangible. And so we really made sure that level of touch point for private donors within our organization is available and very, very on point.
What then is, again, I think that being able to turn on a dime with the fundraising effort, you know, when pandemic first hit, you know, my word of advice to nonprofits was don't fire your fundraisers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, still, you know, let's take a look at the overall fundraising portfolio. Let's figure out how to, you know, not only get fundraising subscribers, but to improve your individual ask, right? Even if it's just for smaller donations, you don't have to go after major gifts. They could be medium-sized gifts, but at least you should still concentrate on that even during times of pandemic, because by and large, most nonprofit missions are still relevant, right? Pandemic hasn't removed those needs. So would you say that it's more important for a nonprofit to continue to look at virtual events, or is it better to look at private donors, or is what would you suggest along those lines?
So I, you know, if you can imagine, we have a pie chart of, you know, like here's the grants, here's the private donors, here's the events, the galas, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So those individual pieces might have to tweak a little bit depending on the way that grants go during the pandemic or recession, and private donors as well. Luckily, we're seeing, based on the conversations I've had with fellow nonprofits, either owners or board members, that private donors are actually going up. You know, people have been at home, so they're not spending as much money. They're able to save. Even people who've been out of work, you know, the pandemic assistance really helped support them. And I've seen so many people who received the $1,200 from the stimulus and turned around and said, I want to donate this. And so that was really phenomenal. We're seeing really, really great rallying of private donors behind nonprofits. So anyone listening who's a private donor, thank you for supporting your nonprofits. But so if you had part of your pie chart that was a gala or events, I've seen one of the panic pivots actually was to completely remove that piece of the pie chart, because we're not going to be able to do it. No one's going to put on a dress and sit at home, and there's no networking, and people go to these things for networking. And how do we even do, you know, there's just all the excuses, all the reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
One of the organizations I'm involved with, just as a community member, so I'm not on the board. They went ahead with their gala, and they had, the biggest donors all received little dinner kits from a local vendor, which was just such a cool way to kind of have this cyclical support within the community. Mm-hmm. Everyone dressed up. They really worked hard to create a slideshow that conveyed the emotional tie of the organization. So that was really exciting to see. And that was actually very early on in the wild, wild west of the pandemic. And so it's totally possible, totally doable. We at STEM Greenhouse are about to put on our own virtual fundraising event, which is extremely exciting. And that is happening September 2nd. And we are doing a combined effort kind of with like a live Facebook link. And so it's not going to be very long. And it's not going to be a whole, to do, if you will. It's a lunch event, and as of right now, the plan is just for a half an hour. But even so, getting in front of the community, showing them that we're still there, showing them, hey, we still need your support, especially because we're supporting vulnerable children in inner city schools, and Black Lives Matter is at the fore of our thought right now. Mm-hmm. So here's a way to create equity within school systems and in STEM careers, you know, help us to serve these kids. And so we have a lot of opportunity here with messaging by creating a virtual event, not just about the money, right? And so mm-hmm. I think that's going back to the strategic plan and goals. Like, what was the goal of the gala in the first place? Why were you doing it? Was it all about the money? Was it the only thing that happened that came out of it? And typically the answer is no. There was networking. There were other opportunities that opened. There was connecting with the community and showing them that there's a presence. And so I really encourage other nonprofits to keep going and to keep that piece of the pie chart valuable.
I think it's easy to overcomplicate fundraising events as well. I didn't know if you'd noticed any of that in your work, or if you had any advice to nonprofits about, you know, do you dress it up? Do you keep it simple? I've heard everything from on the one end that, you know, people who bought a ticket to the event through whatever mechanism also got like a bag of swag or some goodies.
Yeah.
And that the event itself had an MC, and the MC, mm-hmm. you know, queued up different clips and did the whole friend making exercise. And on the other end of that, I've heard something a little different where there was simply a live band and an MC, and there were no one got, you know, the overhead wasn't there. There were no bags of swag or anything like that were given. And I've heard, you know, people say that they like both, and I've heard people have cautions on both. Like, the people who got the bags of swag might say, look, stop spending money on this. Just use it for your stuff. You know, mm-hmm. and I didn't know if you had any thoughts about it, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I think it comes back to precedence. Like, what's the precedence that you've had set in previous years? So if you have historically partnered with other local businesses and that's kind of a cornerstone piece of the event, then perhaps you want to keep that because you don't want to suddenly drop other local businesses that were expecting this event, right? Mm-hmm. But, so ours is going to be very stripped down. And it's a lot more on the virtual side of virtual flyers, virtual connections, and that sort of thing. So we're not trying to, as you said, like carry a lot of weight and have a lot of complications. For my for-profit clients, and I think this is important for nonprofit, is to think about what an in-person event did or does, and think about, do you want to facilitate that? So for example, a friend of mine created an event that would support local drag queens, because as you surely know, drag queens make most of their money by doing events mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then receiving tips at the events and getting paid to sing or perform whatever their their primary mode is.
Right.
And so my friend created this at-home drag event where it was like a dinner and a show, but obviously you can't go to a dinner and a show, so it was all virtual, but each different levels received different kind of like a box, like you're talking about, like a swag, but one was, the lowest tier was just like a little candle, mm-hmm. and I think like a couple goodies. But the highest tier was, there was a hour before the show where you received all the things that you needed in order to make a great meal. And then there was a live chef on Zoom
wow.
that was telling you how to make the meal. So it was really like a dinner and a show. And so it was a great date package. And it turned out great. They actually, they had said that they were going to give the drag queens, a certain amount. They were able to triple what they paid the drag queens, and they had a live, live tipping on the platform that they used as well. And so it really, it turned into this beautiful event. And so that's the mode of creativity that I'm asking people to go to is that, you know, so this was for the Queer Wedding Collective, which weddings aren't happening. So they created this date night event with drag queens. What usually happens in an in-person event, like a dinner and a show, is you see the show, it's a little ways away from the table, but then you get this meal and you get this romantic experience. Okay, how do we facilitate a romantic experience? Can we like bridge that gap between the physical and the virtual? Yes, we can. We can create these little kits that come at different tiers. So for a nonprofit doing an event, you know, like, again, do you usually have a band? I love that idea of having a band and supporting local bands. Mm-hmm. And is the band donating their tips to the nonprofit? And so can we have a live tipping mechanism, you know, either using Zoom or Ecamm Live or any other program to create the event? And then are there tiers? I love mm-hmm. the tier idea, because then you know that, you know, maybe the goods are donated, but there's a value there that's added. And so then they give bigger. But as you said, it doesn't have to be that big of a deal. The most important thing is staying in front of the community and showing them, you know, we need your support and we are here giving support in return.
Yep, exactly. You're still relevant, and it's critically important that the communications effort does not flag. So Veronica, you're working on a book on pandemic currently. Can you tell me more about that? And I think you're doing a podcast to parallel that, isn't that right?
Yeah, I am. So as you said, I'm the author of Stories of Elders, which documented the paradigm shift of the 50-year high-tech revolution. So now we are going through a paradigm shift again, but instead of 50 years, it's only a few months. And so we're all kind of feeling overwhelmed. And so that will be called Stories of COVID. And right now, as you said, there is a podcast partner, which is just short little clips from the worldwide interviews. So if you're curious how other people are experiencing the pandemic without the hype of the media, you can definitely check out my podcast.
Awesome. Yes, I will definitely check it out, and I'm looking forward to that.
Woo-hoo.
Veronica, we are very nearly out of time. Is there any parting words of wisdom or topics we should be sure to cover before we wrap up this episode?
Yeah, you know, really just keep doing the work and being creative in it, especially if you're a nonprofit that's been around for a long time. You've probably worked your way into a rhythm. You're very used to the way things go. This is the way they've been for years. And so that creativity might not be as at the forefront for you. And now is a time for creativity. Our nonprofits are going to do great during this time. We all need your support. And so keep at it and keep thinking, how can I be creative during this time in a way that not only serves the community, but also serves the nonprofit in order to create opportunities for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Veronica, thank you. I always ask if it's appropriate, if a listener wanted to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, 1,000%. Oh, please. So you can find me at Veronica Kirin, which is K-I-R-I-N, like the beer, veronicakirin.com. And you can get me on social media and email me from there.
Excellent. Veronica, as you know, always, I hope we get to do this again sometime, and thank you for making the time to make this episode with me today.
Thank you so much, Mickey, for the work that you're doing. Much appreciated.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. We invite your support of our efforts via Patreon. Please find us at patreon.com/nonprofitsnapcast. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.